Welcome into episode 9 of the Barbecue Hound with Patrick Netherton. I, of course, the aforementioned Patrick Netherton, super excited to have you with us for this one. We are going to dip back inside the state of Texas. We've gotten out of Texas, Kansas City, and Tennessee, of course, with Blake Stoker of Blake's at Southern Milling in Martin, Tennessee. And we've gone up to Kansas City for Tyler Harp of Harp Barbecue in Kansas City. And then talked last week about my trip to South Texas and going dove hunting and hitting a bunch of places down in South Texas, Teddy's and GW's down in the Rio Grande Valley, and then getting to Butters in Senton. We do have the smoke coming up after our interview with Brendan Todd of Brendan's Barbecue in Nacogdoches, Texas. Don't forget, if you want to be a part of the smoke, super easy to do. Just hit us up on our email. That is patrick@thebbqhound.com. You can text us 318-6570-HAM, 318-6570-426. That is how you reach us. You can either text us there or leave a voicemail, and we can play that on the show. And then, of course, you can find us, if you like, very easy to do. Just hit us up on any of our social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or X. It is @TheBBQHound on all of those. So email, text, or leave a voicemail, or send us any notes on our social media platforms. And of course, if you comment on the videos that are out on YouTube, we will get those comments as well. Please don't forget to share the show. Tell all your friends. Let's continue to grow this thing. Please subscribe. Tell folks about us. In addition to subscribing, that helps get our numbers up, our metrics. All of those things help us out immensely. We would appreciate it if you do that. One quick story before we get to Brendan Todd of Brendan's Barbecue in Nacogdoches, new member of the Texas Monthly Top 50. So I told the story last week of going down to South Texas, going dove hunting with my dad and my nephew and some people that were down there. We got to hit Teddy's and GW's in the Rio Grande Valley. We got to hit Butters on the way back in Senton, just south of Texas, or just south of Corpus Christi, Texas. And I did have one. I thought about leaving this for the smoke, but I decided, you know what? I want to do this up top. The main comment I got, or maybe the funniest comment I got, was from my own father. Now, I talked about the fact that part of the reason I wanted to go down and do this was obviously to go visit 3 Texas Monthly Top 50 barbecue places. That's good content for us here on the Barbecue Hound. But also part of the reason I wanted to go is because my dad is in his 70s, and I don't know how many more memories. He's very mobile. He's very mentally sharp. Guy still gets around. He works every day. He's the hardest working man I know, and works 7,000% harder than I do. That's for sure. Owns a construction business, still out on the roads, on his jobs, you know, doing plans, all that stuff. The guy is amazing. But I mentioned I wanted to go on the trip because I don't know how many trips we have left. Again, he's in his 70s. Well, as you might expect, a guy that is still very mobile, still very active, still getting around and working, not a huge fan of me talking about him being old. He said that one of his superintendents listened to the show, said, "I heard you calling me old." Like, yeah, you are old. You're in your 70s. That doesn't mean you're not spry. That doesn't mean you're not still getting around well and you know, mentally sharp and physically sharp and all of that. But yeah, you are old. You're in your 70s. But so I just wanted to address the fact that my dad, Buster, was quite upset at me intimating that he was old, and part of the reason that I went on that trip to South Texas dove hunting and barbecuing was because he was old and I needed to make some memories. But he is. So we'll leave it at that. All right, coming up on this week's edition of The Barbecue Hound, an opportunity to chat with a guy in the piney woods of East Texas, Nacogdoches, where Stephen F. Austin State University is, the Lumberjacks. If you know anything about that area of the world, it is it's a beautiful country, beautiful part of Texas. But, you know, East Texas, not always well represented on the Texas Monthly Top 50. So we're glad to have Brendan Todd join us as we talk about how he went from almost owning a Chick-fil-A franchise to becoming the owner of a Texas Monthly Top 50 barbecue joint. So enjoy as we chat with Brendan Todd of Brendan's Barbecue in Nacogdoches. All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Brendan Todd of Brendan's Barbecue in Nacogdoches. Look, as a guy who named his show the Patrick Netherton Show, I can appreciate a guy who named his barbecue place Brendan's Barbecue, and his name's Brendan. I want to start there first, Brendan. Like, first, how are you, man? You doing okay? Everything good?
I am good. Just finished the lunch rush. Ran downtown to my secret getaway office where their AC is nice.
Yeah, oh, that's the best. Look, as a man that has quite a few thermal layers on him, I appreciate the air conditioning too. I promise. All right, let's start there though. The name, right? You know, it's you see, I love barbecue names because they're everything from I'm paying tribute to my grandfather to a concept. This was something that you know four guys got together and that was our nickname. So. Why Brendan's Barbecue?
Man, that's a good question. I don't get asked that one. I think it's the second time I've been asked that question. I almost called it the Pig Apple.
Okay.
I thought that was a cool name, had a good ring to it. And, you know, we have a sandwich called the Pig Apple. And I was stuck between Brendan's Barbecue and the Pig Apple. And it came down to two things. My mother had to be complicated and put a Y in my name. So it's B-E-N-D-Y-N, and it looks cool when it's in cursive. And so whenever we were playing with the way Pig Apple looked and the way my name looked, I don't know, something about that Y just made it really unique and look cool. And it came down to like what I want people to say and what do I want to hear. And with my barbecue and what we do and the atmosphere and culture that I want to provide, I really want people to say, hey, we're going to Brendan's today, or have you been to Brendan's? It just makes it that home, almost like they're coming to my house. And as opposed to the Pig Apple kind of has more of a, like its own entity kind of thing. And I want to say if I opened a second location, you know, if my kids grow up and want to do it, we'd call it the Pig Apple. Or if I opened like a really cool vibey steakhouse, we'd call it the Pig Apple. But I don't know, there's just something homey about saying Brendan's Barbecue and we're going to Brendan's, and just makes it extra special to me.
Yeah. And honestly, as a Louisiana kid, that's kind of a New Orleans thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like even close to Brendan's is Brennan's, right? Brennan's is, you know, there's 75 of them and the family is huge or whatever, but you always know, hey, I'm going to Brennan's or I'm going to Commander's or, you know, there's so many places that are just right there. Well, I hope after this podcast blows up, I hope that you make sure you trademark Pig Apple so no one takes your idea and runs with it, you know.
Yeah, thanks for giving them the idea. Yeah.
Yeah, but here's the cool thing, right? Like, you mentioned the cursive and the why and the look and everything. And I think that's part of one of the interesting things about barbecue is the aesthetic of it. Because to me, barbecue, obviously an auditory medium, because I'm doing a podcast about it, and a visual medium because, you know, I'm doing a video cast about it. But barbecue now is so much about the presentation, and it's what does the platter look like? And it's, you know, what is your overall presentation? When I came into your place, right, your brick and mortar, it's mm-hmm. set up well, there's pictures all over the wall, like your aesthetic of your barbecue is as good as the food is. And I think that's a huge plus.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
You know, so when you're trying to figure out an aesthetic, right, and you come up with a name, you know, you've got the food, you know, you've got that handled. How do you go about, you know, are you consulting a bunch of people? Is it, hey, just what do I like? How do you decide to come up with the aesthetic of your barbecue beyond just the taste of it?
Yeah, it's 100% just what I like and the things that inspire me. And I think that's how every restaurant should be is, I mean, when you walk into a place, the food that they're eating should taste very unique to that chef or pitmaster because they're creating something that they're inspired by. That goes with our aesthetic. Whenever we got our food truck, it was just this beautiful, you know, fire engine red food truck. We did no wrapping on it or anything. But I have a family friend who is in Dallas, and he does pinstriping, and he does, you know, hand painted signs and lettering, and he's phenomenal. When I, you know, growing up in the summers, you know, I used to do gym floors in the family. We would do the mascots on the floor. So that's how I knew him. And he came all the way from Dallas and just, you know, free handed this really cool hot rod style pinstriping. And then after Daniel Vaughn came and, you know, we had that Pig Apple Sandwich Award for Best Barbecue Bites, he helped us create the logo for having a pig and a green apple. And so it really just comes together. You know, I wanted this cool hot rod theme. And it's, you know, it's who you know. I had a family friend who's really good and has a skill. And so he came and did it, and just it all fell in place. And that's carried over into the brick and mortar. You know, our menu board, is he created it by hand. It's all hand painted. He has that pinstriping going down it. He's done it, you know, all over the restaurant. You can see his handiwork. So it contributes to that overall aesthetic.
Yeah, it really, like I said, it's a feast for your eyes as much as it is for the other senses as well. All right, let's back up a little bit, because we always like to figure out when the proverbial barbecue bug bit. Take us back into your history. When did you get into this? When did you decide this is something that you wanted to turn, as I like to say, from an avocation into a vocation?
Sure. I've always wanted to do a restaurant, and that's what I was doing. I was working for our local Chick-fil-A here in Nacogdoches, and I was the GM there. And I love that company. And I was working on getting my foot in the door so I can own my own Chick-fil-A. I was well aware of the systems. I had been trained on profit management and labor costs and everything about the restaurant. You know, I got really good at it. I was the sales director for the store. And I went to go to Austin. And I think, like most people, I think a lot of barbecue restaurants today are definitely inspired by Franklin Barbecue. Mm-hmm. And I went to go see some best friends that moved to Austin after college. And you know, East Texas barbecue wasn't, you know, we're not really well known at the time in 2010, 2011 for barbecue. So, or at least I wasn't. And went to Franklin Barbecue, and my buddy's like, yeah, we got to get there at 7:30 in the morning. This place is salt and pepper. And I could not wrap my head around it at all. I was like, man, why do we have to go stand in line for 5 hours? It's just salt and pepper. I don't understand. Like, you know, barbecue can't be that good. And man, sure enough, it was. I remember walking into Franklin's, and I was stressed out by how many people were in line. And I didn't know this, you know, we got to order by the pound. I wasn't sure how that worked. And I really was like stressed, you know. I came from Chick-fil-A, like things got to go fast. And when I finally got to order, the guy treated me, the slicer treated me like I was the only person in the restaurant. Like I was the only reason he had a job. Man, he was so welcoming. Gave me that burn-in slice first bite and asked me where I was from, and probably to slow the line down because you know how crazy it can get at Franklin's. But man, I just felt welcomed. And with the restaurant atmosphere, I connected with that, customer satisfaction, and came home just inspired by that visit and didn't necessarily say, oh, I got to do a barbecue restaurant now. I was just obsessed with how good Franklin Barbecue was. I went back probably 5 more times. And man, every time that first visit specifically, whenever I first ate Aaron Franklin's barbecue, I forgot how long I was in line. When you take that first bite of that Central Texas style barbecue, craft barbecue, and it's new to you, I forgot how long I was in line, all the sweat and all that gone. I was just completely entranced by how good the barbecue was. And being 5 hours away, I just wanted to figure out how to make barbecue that good so I didn't have to drive all the way to Austin to get it.
You know, it's interesting you mention that, because look, I would never call a pitmaster lazy, obviously, because y'all are some of the hardest working dudes in the business, but I respect the idea of, I don't want to have to drive and wait in line for this, so let me just do it myself. I mean, that's a respectable quality, I think.
Yeah, I was a foodie, and I just wanted to learn how to make that kind of barbecue, and just an obsession with how to cook a brisket, and it tastes just as good with salt and pepper. And I would cook a brisket and then cook a rack of ribs and put it on social media, and friends would ask me to cook a brisket and cook a rack of ribs. And that grown into my cousin getting married and they needed barbecue for the wedding. I said, man, I'll do that. And I cooked a bunch of barbecue and hired some friends that worked with me and had this whole catered event. And I would say my cousin's wedding is when that light bulb went, you know, seeing my barbecue feed 150 people mm-hmm. and having a crew there serving it and me slicing the meat. I was like, man, this is actually working out pretty cool. And that's when that seed went in of what if we did this and I brought this here to Nacogdoches, because we had no craft style barbecue. That was so foreign here in Nacogdoches. And started catering weddings for fun and picked up doing that. And then we had to get a food truck just for the catering. At one point I was catering 3 weddings a month for a season and we were so busy. And with that food truck, I had a pop-up window that could be like a true food truck one day. And sure enough, it was. You know, we finally got to open a food truck here in Nacogdoches, and it took off from there.
Was there ever a part of you that was like, maybe I need to get out of Nacogdoches? Because, you know, I work in Nacogdoches, and Nacogdoches and Nacogdoches are sister cities. And it's a college town, but it's a little bigger than an average college town. There's more to it than that, I think, than Nacogdoches in Louisiana. But was there ever a point where you were like, hey, maybe I need to, you know, Austin or Dallas or Houston or something like that?
The only point where we considered it was in the very beginning before we try to make our name known here. If we did barbecue anywhere else, it would have been Hot Springs, Arkansas, just because we love that area. That's where my wife's family is, and we really considered it. But man, with all the catering I had been doing in Nacogdoches, I had already established a demand for Brendan's barbecue. And so I didn't want to start that over anywhere else. And we just genuinely love Nacogdoches. It's such a beautiful town here. And I had no interest in starting over. I mean, yeah, people just wanted us to exist as a restaurant. So there was a demand for us before we even opened that window for the food truck.
Yeah, it is amazing. And look, there's places that are deserts when it comes to barbecue or when it comes to certain food groups, that kind of thing. If you go to Dallas, you're not in a barbecue desert. You go to Houston, you're not in a barbecue desert. But as you mentioned, even Hot Springs, look, I'm a McLard's guy from way back. Like I, you know, and McLard's isn't the best barbecue in the world, but it's a historic place that's been there for decades. But in Nacogdoches, you're in a little bit of a barbecue desert.
It doesn't feel like a desert to me, though. I grew up in Hemphill and I graduated with, you know, 76 other people. So Nacogdoches to me was like the big city. But Nacogdoches is unique in that it is a college town, and there's a big enough piece of pie that was just waiting, you know, that nobody had claimed. You know, we have barbecue restaurants here. There's at least 3 or 4 other ones, mm-hmm. but it's not what we do. It's not that craft style barbecue that you get, you know, like the other top 50 joints. East Texas barbecue is really big on, let's chop up a bunch of meat, sauce it, you know, slap it on a potato, which it's good. But for what we do, that did not exist in Nacogdoches. And so there's a huge opportunity there for sure.
Yeah, I always joked with Stephen Joseph from Riverport up in Jefferson. You know, he always said the chopped beef keeps the light on. You know, the lights are on because the chopped beef sandwich exists. And every time I go in there and I see him chopping that brisket, you know, the small tear comes out down my eye. And I'm like, and he said, look, it is what it is, right? It's East Texas. And I'm curious mm-hmm. because, you know, he has fought that battle. Obviously, chopped brisket sandwich is the moneymaker. But how do you go about fighting that battle? Or maybe more to the point, educating the people that are there on, hey, barbecue is not just some baby backs and some chopped brisket.
Yeah, man, I try to fight that battle in the beginning because I felt like I had to. There's other barbecue joints that I know, and I won't say by name, but they refuse to chop the brisket. You know, they would say, well, you know, we work too hard to get a bark and a slice on it. But man, I think there's a need for chopped brisket. I think it's its own thing. And so instead of fighting that battle, I fought it because I felt like I had to. Man, I embraced it. Like, you know, if I'm in East Texas and I have craft style barbecue, why not try to have a fusion with East Texas? And I think it works. I love a chopped brisket sandwich. There's something special about, you know, rather than layers of here's bark, here's salt, here's this moist meat. why not chop it up and then add your unique sauce to it? And it is its own thing. I think there's a need for more chopped brisket in the barbecue culture. And a chopped brisket loaded on a baked potato, man, that's one of the most like home feeling Southern things you can eat in East Texas. I am not against chopping brisket and making it a chopped sandwich or a loaded potato at all.
Well, I mean, look at, you know, again, not to talk about Steven, but at Riverport, the swamp fries, right? He chops brisket, he puts it on top of French fries, and it's a huge deal. And it is funny, right? Because growing up in Shreveport in Louisiana, you know, we really are a barbecue desert. We've got some barbecue places here, but they're not good, you know, and we've had some that are moving in and some that are starting to get a little better. So, you know, we're going to cover that in another episode of the podcast at some point. Mm-hmm. But my chopped beef sandwich was always just, it was okay. It was not great. It was what I grew up on, but I didn't know any better. The first time I sat down at a legit barbecue place and had a legit chopped beef sandwich from a legit piece of brisket was eye-opening, right? I never had those crunchy bits of bark that were in there, and I never had the sauce that perfectly complemented it. That was not stuff I grew up on. So I do agree with you. I think there's a good place for a chopped beef sandwich in there. And I love the fact that you were still willing to embrace that and maybe even put a different spin on it.
Well, I mean, there's other needs too. You know, there's definitely an older culture generation that they need it chopped. You know, there are people whose mouth and teeth are probably not ready to work on slices of brisket. They want it chopped. We get people that just got out of a dentist appointment or just out of some surgery. They want it chopped. And dude, honestly, I think there's a financial need for chopped meat. You know, I mean, we're in barbecue. Barbecue is not cheap. It's, you know, we've been saying it for years, but if you get a piece of lean brisket that's drier than you want it to be, set that aside, chop it up, save it for your potatoes, save it for your chopped sandwich. And it helps that financial need. If you have brisket that just, you know, let's say you didn't sell out for the day, well, you can throw it away, and that's waste.
That'll definitely bring a tear to your eye at that point. Yeah.
Or you can utilize it. You can use it in boudin, chop it up for tacos, loaded potatoes. So I think with being a restaurant and being a business, if you can find a need for chopped beef, it definitely helps those margins and that bottom line for sure.
Let's back up a little bit, because you were at Chick-fil-A, right? So if I needed a chicken sandwich, I know where I'm coming. If I need a 30 pack of nuggets, I know where I'm coming. How do you go from a guy who knows how the chicken's made to a guy that turns into a beef and pork guy? And obviously you know, do chicken from time to time, that sort of thing. But how did you develop your own recipes and your own tastes after those visits to Aaron Franklin?
It goes back to that being inspired. The things I brought from Chick-fil-A, you can see in my restaurant. You know, having a staple menu and a fixed menu and doing specials only on the weekend. You know, I believe in having a perfect system. This is more about how business runs versus just, you know, good quality chefy food. But the things I learned at Chick-fil-A as far as streamlining things, I think is very important. You know, I have menus and recipes that are designed for the college student that works for me. You know, I can't hire, not everybody can be a chef and work all hours of the day. I have to have recipes where a college student working part-time can come and make it. Getting my flavors was a fun journey and still is here in Nacogdoches. So we use coffee in our brisket. That's 50% of our rub at least. And I've gone through a journey of finding out, you know, using local coffee. That relationship with that coffee supplier didn't work out at the time. So that ended. And I started using just commercial coffee so I could keep using coffee. And recently, it was this year, the most well-known coffee joint in our area, I found out that they've been roasting their own coffee beans. So they get their coffee beans shipped to them and they roast them. They have a variety of beans and they really know what they're doing when it comes to roasting beans. And so they are roasting those beans and grinding them for us for our brisket. And they, you know, they've worked up our own blend and a special grind. And we went through tasting of their coffee versus commercial coffee. And years ago, I really couldn't even tell the difference, but there's something about just with them knowing what they're doing with coffee and us knowing what we're doing with the brisket and fusing those things together, when we tasted the difference, we could taste a difference. And so it's awesome that we're doing something, brisket for sure, that is a unique thing only to Nacogdoches. The coffee you can only get in Nacogdoches. You know, the way we cook a brisket on our pits, you can only find in Nacogdoches.
And I would say, you know, one marketing strategy then is, you know, if you, you need your caffeine hit for the day, obviously you show up at Brendan's and eat a slice of brisket.
Yeah, for sure. Whenever my wife was pregnant, the baby would jump around a bit. And I think we were finding out that it was the coffee and the brisket giving her that extra bump of caffeine.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm a Diet Coke guy. That's where I get my caffeine from. But yeah, if you told me that I could get some caffeinated brisket, I think I might, you know, I might switch. That's, yeah. I'm just saying, you know, you can have that marketing ploy for free, sir. I'll let you have that one for free.
But it's such a unique flavor using coffee. You know, we use foil because we use coffee. We used to use butcher paper back in the day, and I've gone back and forth years ago, but I believe in foil. I believe in the Texas crunch, but for us, it's not to speed up the process. It's because I'm using coffee. Once we've smoked a brisket for 8 hours or so, once we wrap it tight in that foil, we are now brewing coffee with brisket fat. And that brisket is now braising in that foil package, in that coffee tallow, au jus, you know, whatever you want to call it. And so now that brisket is braising in coffee all night long as it rests. And dude, it is a flavor for sure that's different.
So I have to know then, have you poured the drippings into a mug? And haven't you?
Oh yeah, I've done it. Yeah, I get bread and just dunk the bread in it. You know, in the back of house, we'll make a nice like brisket dip. You know, we'll make a brisket sandwich and dunk it. But we use that. We save the au jus.
Sure, of course.
In our boudin, we've recently been using it in our collard greens. We use that as a base broth for cooking the greens in. There's a lot of things you can use that au jus for.
I'm just thinking now, you know, my marketing side of my brain is just thinking you can sell coffee brisket and brisket coffee at the same time, right? Like here's two slices of coffee brisket and a mug of brisket coffee that you can sip while you do it. I'm just saying, you know, these are you take these ideas and run with them or don't. But I give them to you for free. So I'm just saying a little brisket coffee.
Something to it.
Just think about it. A little brisket coffee. Hey, all right. So you one of the big things that happens for a lot of food trucks is the move from the truck to the brick and mortar. Walk us through that process. When did you decide when you were in the truck that you wanted to get into a brick and mortar, and what was that process like?
Yeah, I think everybody's goal. I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but a food truck is a good stepping stone into figuring out who you are. Like what, you know, barbecue is so rampant in Texas. And so you want to do something that's unique to you. And a food truck is a good time of learning what your style of barbecue is. And then, yeah, it's a good learning curve into getting to your brick and mortar. The goal is to always be in a brick and mortar. I didn't expect for us to get inside a brick and mortar as fast as we did. We were in the food truck for about a year and a half, you know, maybe 2 years. In our first year, Daniel Vaughn came maybe 6 months after us being open. And gosh, I was stressed. I was so stressed. I wasn't even sure it was him. I just see him get out the car. And I was like, man, I think that's Daniel. And so I asked him for his name. I said, hey, man, what's your name? He goes, Daniel. And in the back of my head, I'm like, here we go.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, you know, I'll tell you. And I've told him, like, I wasn't ready for that visit yet. It'd be cool to have Texas Monthly visit one day, but I just want to sell barbecue. I just love doing this. But Daniel doesn't give you that option when he shows up, like, you know, how long you've been in business. And, you know, he had the Big Apple sandwich. And I remember seeing him stand up to take pictures. I was like, okay, well, I think he likes something. But come to find out, you know, later that year, we got the best barbecue bites for that Pig Apple sandwich. And things really blew up for us after that. We were selling out of the food truck, selling out almost every day. And getting into 2020, you know, we just outgrown the food truck. Cooking in the atmosphere of food trucks was starting to get to me. You know, it rains a lot for some reason in East Texas. And so cooking all night till 4 o'clock in the morning and muddy rain and just to serve lunch during the rain was not fun. So I wanted a place that had air conditioning that I could cook in the rain and not affect my business. And so in 2020, we got our location downtown, and it used to be an AA building. And then after that, it was a coffee shop. And so that space became available, and it was just really asking to be a barbecue place. It's extremely small. It's incredibly small. But when you're coming from a food truck, man, that place looked like a mansion to me with the space that we got out of it. But we opened that during 2020, during COVID, which yeah. I'm sure was a nightmare and horrible for everybody. And there's a lot of personal things that happened. Right when I got the keys to the building, I want to say on day three of me renovating during COVID, while my crew was running the food truck, my father had passed away from a heart attack. And that was difficult just trying to manage that. And my wife was also pregnant. You know, we were due within like a 2 month window of having our second child. So I am running a food truck, renovating a building, having a loss in the family, and then having a gain in the family with the son being born. It was difficult, but there's something about Nacogdoches and the people that I love here that kept me here. And just, they reminded me why I love the people here and that demand. Once COVID happened, there were customers buying more food than they needed. They made it known to me, all of them, if anything, that they need to keep us in business. You know, COVID was scary for all businesses, but all my customers wanted to make sure that we were not going to go anywhere. So we were very financially supported with all the sales during COVID. And then finally, you know, we opened up the restaurant June of 2020. And I think being a new brick and mortar saved us during COVID because people were so excited for the new thing. Working with the parameters were difficult, but we survived, and more than survived, we thrived during COVID. I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, it's interesting. And we, you know, we talked about your thoughts about maybe moving to Hot Springs or somewhere like that. But that's, to me, one of the cool things, not necessarily just a barbecue culture, but of kind of small town culture. And again, Nacogdoches isn't that small compared to some other places around East Texas, but it is comparatively to Longview, to Dallas, to Houston, that sort of thing. The idea of the community embracing you, and I, you know, I hate to go back and reference Stephen again, but you know, his place burned down, and oh, yeah. the community jumped in and said, "Hey, we need you to rebuild." So I love the idea of the small town really embracing you and getting you through a hurdle. And I'm curious because you and I both know in 2023, 24, 25, as prices of beef have continued to soar, things have gotten tight for all of you guys. I'm curious how the community has responded to that, because I'm sure you've had to raise prices here and there and you've had to kind of, you know, tighten the belt. I'm curious if that same sort of atmosphere has prevailed.
Fortunately, I mean, once you've established yourself as quality barbecue, some people fret at the price, but usually, I mean, more often than not, the quality speaks for itself. And we have that to be thankful for. And you gotta work for that for sure. I mean, within, you know, I would say at our level and the tier of barbecue we're in, you know, specifically being top 50, I have the lowest prices on the list. You know, we're at 27 a pound, where a lot of these places are pushing $38 to $44 a pound. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of my customers are well aware of those other places. And so to me, I mean, to them, we're cheaper barbecue for the quality we are.
Yeah. And by the way, that's a huge deal to have a learned fan base, so to speak, mm-hmm. right? To have a group of people that understand, yeah, go to Franklin in Austin or any of the places in Austin or Dallas or Houston, and good luck getting anything close to these prices.
Sure. Yeah, it is educating the customer. But, you know, as long as the quality is there and that passion's there, and in that conversation, we're being respectful as opposed to just feeling antagonized. Once the customer eats the food, I'm trying to give them that same experience that inspired me. You know, going to Franklin's where I told you you're in line for 4 or 5 hours, but when mm-hmm. you eat the barbecue, You don't remember how much money you spent. You don't remember how long you're in line. You don't remember how much you just sweat. You just think about how good this barbecue is. And I believe that's what's going on in our place.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that, you know, when you... Yeah, there's a little bit of that when you go into... this is going to be the worst example I could possibly have. But you know, like when you take a colonoscopy and they give you... Yeah, exactly. So that's a good start, right? You know, when you get a colon, they give you that twilight medication. You don't really... They don't really put you out, but you don't remember what happened. And you just leave and you're like, okay, well, I got my thing. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was. I feel like good barbecue is a little bit like a colonoscopy where you go in, you don't remember the sweating, the standing in line like you were talking about. You don't remember having to be on your feet. When I went to Burnt Bean in Seguin, I was there for 3 hours in line. You don't remember any of that. You just remember how good the food is. So you heard it here first, everyone. Good barbecue is like a colonoscopy.
Well, if you know my marketing style, the stuff I put on shirts, Patrick, I think you just gave me a new shirt. It's, you know, Brenda's barbecue as good as a colonoscopy.
That's right. It's exact same as a colonoscopy. And look, it's coffee. So, I mean, it kind of cleans you out too, right? That's what coffee does. I mean, look, I'm just saying, I'm not saying I'm the most brilliant marketer, but I'm definitely on the list. Hey, you mentioned the sandwich, the pig apple. Tell us about it. Why did it end up on the Daniel Vaughn list of best bites?
Man, it's one of those things where, you know, in my style of cooking, I've learned that less is more. A lot of people, and there's needs for it, but some people's style of cooking is add a lot of things. And the way I like to cook is to have simpler flavors so that you can taste those flavors and they don't really compete with each other, but they enhance each other. On my honeymoon, I was in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I ate this pork sandwich, and it wasn't a barbecue sandwich. It was a fried pork chop sandwich with slices of green apple on it and this sriracha mayo. And I ate that sandwich, and that's when I was dabbling in barbecue. And I just loved the way a Granny Smith apple tasted with pork. And I thought, man, this has to work as a barbecue sandwich. And came home and did it, and it does work. So that pig apple sandwich is a brioche bun. We put slices of Granny Smith apples, the green apples on bottom. We use pulled pork. I'm a believer in pulled pork. I don't care what Daniel says. We joke about it all the time. Mm-hmm. And we top it with our house slaw. And then we make our version of a Carolina sauce, which is really just heavy mustard and vinegar. And there's something about that pulled pork with that tart green apple and a savory slaw with Carolina sauce. It all comes together. But that snap of the apple makes it really fresh.
Yeah, you know,
you can get in my restaurant.
You know, it's interesting because I'm a certified barbecue judge with Kansas City Barbecue Society, and the thing that I always tell people, and you know, when I go to competitions or whatever, when I eat whatever your food is, your rib, your brisket, whatever, I want all of my mouth involved. I don't want just you know, there's what, 5 taste senses. I want all of them activated if you can. So much in competition barbecue is really sweet. Everything is real heavy on sweet. I want everything. And that's why that sandwich to me sounds amazing, because you're getting all of those senses worked at the same time. And I appreciate that. Like, that's what I want. You're getting the spice, you're getting the umami, you're getting the sweet, you're getting the sour with the apple. Like, to me, that is a beautifully composed sandwich right there.
Yeah. And it's just one ingredient. I mean, you can go to dang near every barbecue joint and get a pulled pork sandwich with coleslaw on it. I mean, it's like a Carolina style pork sandwich staple, but adding that one ingredient of a raw apple to it, just made it a whole different thing.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, the texture thing too, I like a good plate. I was just mentioning, right, the chopped beef sandwich. The reason I really enjoyed the chopped beef in East Texas is because it had the bark in it. And it's not something that I got here in Shreveport. I got that crunch that was part of the chopped beef sandwich. You know, we talked a lot about you being in Nacogdoches. It is a heavy college town, Stephen F. Austin. I'll say Forkham Demons right now because they are the number one rival for Northwestern State and have been for years and years. There you go. You can say Axum Jacks. It's okay. I'm curious if you have to change your approach at all because – it is that it's very cyclical in a college town when college is in and when college is out. Obviously, you're getting a lot of year-round support from the community, but do you change things up when the kids are in town?
Not at all. We're pretty consistent year-round. We have a lot of college students, but they're not necessarily our target market. You know, sure. We're just talking about prices, and we'll be honest, barbecue's not cheap and college students are broke. So they're not, you know, college students aren't the ones keeping us alive. They keep me alive with payroll for sure. That, you know, they're great workers. They're young men and women who are willing to work late and ready to work hard. And that's great. And they keep me young, trying to keep up with them for sure. But yeah, the menu doesn't change a whole lot. You know, but I would say like our town survives on the college community. I mean, every year when SFA opens, population goes up, you know, another 15 to probably 18,000 people mm-hmm. somewhere. So yeah, we see a spike in it for sure, but it's mostly because all the other businesses survive on them as well.
What do you do with your menu, right? I mean, obviously you have your staples. Are you adding things? Do you have stuff that you do on certain days? Kind of how do you tweak and massage that menu for things that just pop into your head?
Yeah, every Friday and Saturday, we have a special, and it's, we don't break it. We have not missed a special for the past 2 years. That for us is a way to keep things fresh and alive. And whatever special I have that Friday and Saturday, you won't see again for at least 2 to 3 months. There are some things we rotate, you know, we'll do smoked turkey once every other month. Boudin's really picking up where I almost have to do it every month. We do an Andy stuffed chicken, which is one of my employees came up with. He really wanted to create something, so we collaborated on it. And it's a big chicken breast. We take cream cheese and put our pork rub in it, blend it. We stuff it with roasted red pepper and spinach, and then we wrap it in our candied bacon. And that is right now the most popular special we do. I mean, I'll sell 50 of those in 20 minutes. But every weekend is something different, and it's for us. It keeps us happy when you have the staple menu and you have the repetition of, okay, briskets go on at this time every day, ribs come off at this time, that routine, when you have that cooking mind and you're a foodie like me, it keeps me happy to keep trying something new. So this week we're doing boudin, but I'm trying to accomplish an Asian style boudin. So tomorrow I'm smoking 12 whole ducks. And I've got Thai basil coming in, and I'm on this mission to kind of merge Asian fusion with Cajun spices. And that's my goal this week. But yeah, every weekend is something new on the menu that you can't get in any other day of the week.
Well, you need to come to Shreveport. We have a place literally called the Cajun Asian. So just, yeah, I mean,
do they have an Asian boudin? Cause
I honestly haven't been, but they might, Yeah. I mean, I do admire that. So you mentioned, you know, hey, there's maybe the potential of another place. Like what is your long-term planning now, or is it everything short-term? Like, what do you kind of see as the future moving forward?
Yeah, I kind of do everything at a 5-year goal at a time. In 5 years, if we have truly outgrown our location, which we're getting pretty close to it, we're in a small space, but there's still room to grow with outside sales and stuff. In 5 years, I could see us having a bigger location, just a bigger restaurant. It's nothing I want to explode with by any means. But I mean, at lunchtime, you know, we can't even park our own parking lot, and customers can't park in our lot either. But I love being downtown, and I don't want to lose that. And I love our location because it's in the heart of Nacogdoches. But in 5 years, I could see us having a bigger location. I have no goals for a second location. I don't have any business partners. I like it being just me. The only way I would partner with somebody is if it's my children. And honestly, I am building Brendan's Barbecue to be for them if they want to do it. If one of my three sons grew up and wants to do barbecue, the idea is that I'll let him run a food truck, let him learn the same way I learned. And when I deem he's good and ready, you know, then we can open a second location. It can be his. And hopefully we can call it the Pig Apple. But if he wants to call it Levi's Barbecue or Jackson's Barbecue or Red's Barbecue, you know, so be it. But I like where we're at. It's a sweet spot. We're really busy. Brenda's Barbecue thrives. You know, we haven't had a down year since. And with three boys in soccer and them growing up, two locations just sounds like a nightmare. I have no interest in missing soccer games or taekwondo matches or anything like that.
Are they involved? I mean, do they come around? What is their involvement in what you got going on?
I love that my sons have two personalities. So my oldest, Levi, loves front of house. He's only 8 years old, but he loves getting his apron on and getting his Brendan's Barbecue gear, and he'll hold the front door, and he loves greeting guests. He loves picking up their trays. Dude, this tripped me out. One day I was doing the boards, and he's a good salesman. He was doing boards with me, and a customer is, you know, about to check out, and my son goes, "You want some ribs or something?" And you can't say no to a kid. So he is increasing that check average every time. And then I watch them go to a table and pick up their tray. And you would think that, like, I manipulated my son into this, but I didn't say anything. He picks up their tray and he goes, "Thanks for coming to my daddy's barbecue." And so that kid is a salesman. He loves customers. My second son is a foodie. He's a little chef. He loves cooking. Whenever I'm at home, he cannot be out of the kitchen. If I'm cooking, he has to be there. But he's shy. He's not big on the customers. So there's definitely places for them if they wanted to work together. My oldest could definitely be front of house. My second son could be back of house doing the foodie stuff. My third kid is a wild card. There's no telling what that kid's going to do.
I would say this, right? Like, kudos to Levi for getting out there and look, use your cuteness to your advantage while you've got it, right? Like, I can't, if I go up to someone and go, "You sure you don't want some ribs?" They're like, "Ooh, get away from me, weirdo." Like, you know, I can't do that. So good on him for using the cuteness to his advantage, man. He knows he's got it.
Yeah. They love the restaurant, and I hope that as they grow up, that they'll just want to keep doing it, but whatever they want to do, I support them.
What was the you mentioned being the having the sandwich be in Daniel's Best Bites and the bump you got? I think that was 2018, maybe.
Yeah.
And you got a bump from that. But what was the bump from the top 50?
Oh, it's been a huge bump. Before top 50, we also got Best Barbecue Bites last year for 2024 for the coffee rib brisket. That was a huge win for me to. You know, brisket is at every Texas joint, you know, and as they've said with this previous list or this new list is that brisket just kind of gets you on the radar. So the fact for us to have a brisket that makes Best Barbecue Bites, that was really encouraging. I wasn't expecting that, but that was awesome. The bump we've gotten from the list has been phenomenal, even just on a local level. I mean, as established as I am in Nacogdoches, I'm still running into people that have never heard of me, which blows my mind.
Yeah,
because we're such a small town, but I mean, you're still growing. And then, you know, meeting all the travelers coming in because of the list is huge. So, I mean, I could give you numbers that might be more boring, but I guess just to put in perspective, you know, a busy Saturday last year is typically a Tuesday through Thursday now. And Friday and Saturday is just huge compared to last year. I mean, we're sales are up a lot. The customer interaction is up a lot. It's been great. It's been good.
What's then the upscale for you as you move along, trying to ride that wave and also figure out, okay, how much more do I need to do? How much more do I need to cook? What's that been like? Because it definitely sounds like you're a numbers guy. It sounds like you enjoy crunching that stuff, more of the Chick-fil-A, if you will, side of things. What's it been like trying to figure out that sweet spot for you for how much do you cook versus how much gets eaten?
At first it was, I'm out of pit space, so just pack the pit. Now we have our brand new 1,000-gallon smoker. That's my pride and joy right now. We named it after my dad who passed away, and we called it Popo. And the people who built it, the guy who built it, he got my dad's face engraved on the pit. And dude, it's so beautiful. It's my dad's goofy face. And it's the picture of him hanging up in the restaurant above the top 50 plaque that we have. It's a beautiful picture of him. But now that we have the 1,000-gallon smoker, now we can kind of find that sweet spot. We've got the numbers figured out. I mean, yeah, it's just comparing to last year. You know, you can get mathy with it, whatever your sales increase is or your goal is, you know, you figure that out. And however many briskets you sold last year, you just do that adjustment. It's been cool finding out, you know, what's the lid right now. And we're still figuring it out, but brisket numbers are up. People ask me how many pounds do you cook a day? And I think customers have found it's more interesting if you tell them how many cows you kill a week. That kind of puts it more in perspective.
Well, everyone has to remember there's only two briskets on a cow. So, Yeah. You know, I mean, if you think about how many, like you are doing, you know, 15, 16 briskets, whatever it is, most, you know, a lot of places are doing that. You turn that into however, you know, 300 places in Texas that, you know, it's the math starts mathing pretty quickly.
Yeah. We're averaging about 20 briskets on a Saturday, which, you know, to some places, you know, that's nothing. I think, you know, Franklin's doing 120. I think Barrio Barbecue or somebody's doing 40, 50. Or I think maybe that was Dane's, but I just tell customers I'm killing 10 cows every Saturday, and that puts it in perspective.
You know, you are around the lumberjacks, and obviously SFA has a very, very real agricultural college and a great program. Do you lean on them for anything? You know, wood, obviously stuff you're burning, in terms of meat, like do you do anything with them?
Yeah, with SFA, our sauce is on campus. So we've recently started partnering with the campus. And what we get to do now is if you go on there, you know, if you're a student at SFA, you go to, there's multiple cafeterias, but our barbecue sauce is in one of the restaurants on campus. And so that's cool marketing for us. And I get to partner with my alma mater. When it comes to wood and stuff, all that stuff is local outside of SFA.
That's perfect. That's beautiful. Look, I got to tell you, Brendan, just obviously, you know, you and I have met once and I've eaten at your place once. And obviously I'll be back a bunch because it's a reasonable location for me around this area. But your story is awesome. I love the fact that it's a very family oriented place. I love the fact that it's a very regionality city, you know, centric place. You're very much in the Nacogdoches community, Stephen F. Austin, where you went to school. Like I love your story. And I love the fact that so much of what you do is oriented around the space that you're in. And so, dude, congratulations on all the success. And I hope it just continues for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks to Brendan Todd of Brendan's Barbecue in Nacogdoches for joining us. Spectacular work. That conversation went into some very, very unusual places. I was not ready for. Not often you get to compare barbecue to a colonoscopy, but you know, I found a way to do it. That's what we do here on the Barbecue Hound. That's how we operate. Sometimes you got to compare barbecue to a colonoscopy. Now, I want people to understand what I meant by that. I don't know if I explained it well enough during the interview, but basically what I was saying is, you know, you take the twilight drugs when you go get a colonoscopy, so you don't remember the bad stuff. And you know, Brendan was talking about waiting in line for Franklin's and how you kind of forget that you stood in line and you're sweaty and how many hours it took, all of that stuff, when you get to eat that barbecue. And I was just kind of saying that's, to me, the same thing as the colonoscopy. You just forget the bad stuff and you just remember the good stuff. And obviously the good stuff is you're taking care of your health. And so all you men out there, make sure that you're taking care of your colon health. All right. That's just a smart thing. And I think just good advice for all you men out there, especially because most of our demographic skews a little bit older. So take care of yourselves, guys, medically. All right, let's talk about the smoke. Let's get into the smoke. It is our viewer and listener mailbag. You can reach it in multiple ways. You can email us, patrick@thebbqhound.com. You can also text or leave a voicemail, 318-657-0HAM, 318-657-0426. Comment on any of our social media, Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter X. That is @TheBBQHound. And of course, you can reach us on our YouTube channel if you comment on any of our videos. So let's get to some comments here. We start with our basically our story of going down dove hunting last week and getting some barbecue down there, GW's and Teddy's. I talked about how great everyone was. GW's hooking us up, giving us a massive table and a huge spread of barbecue. Harold Pitmasters, hunting and barbecue. Sounds like the perfect trip. It really was. It was spectacular. Blake Stoker, of course, our buddy, Blake's at Southern Milling up in Martin, Tennessee. The hand clap emoji, the praise hands emoji, and two fire emojis after that. So we appreciate that from him. And we did have one question. We were asking for any questions that you might have for the smoke. Jeff asked, Patrick, what's the most Texas top 50 places you've done before? Are you planning to do all 50 that came out this year? Well, to be honest with you, the last couple of lists, I have not gotten nearly as many as I'd want. A couple of lists ago, I had some work issues. I was traveling a lot and didn't have a lot of free time. This past list had some personal stuff going on and really couldn't travel, had to kind of stay close to home. Now all of those things are a little different. Those things are resolved a bit. So my goal is to actually complete the entire Texas Monthly Top 50 list in the 4 years allotted. My hope is to do it by this time next year, right? And look, the great thing about this year's list is it's a little more compact. You know, the El Paso and the Panhandle aren't quite as represented, so it doesn't mean as much travel. You still have to go to the Rio Grande Valley, which I was able to get done with that dove hunting trip a couple of weeks ago. You still have to get up into a bit of the Panhandle, but it's not nearly as widespread as the list from 4 years ago. So my hope is to be able to go ahead and handle that. I think I'm 8 down now. I took care of 3 on the way or 3 during the Rio Grande Valley trip for dove hunting, and I got 5 on my trip to San Antonio. So the hope is to be able to get the entire top 50 list done this time and go ahead and, like Brett Kawada, former guest on the Barbecue Hound, Brett Kawada able to take care of his third list in a row. He got all of the previous two and this list done. And of course, we interviewed him because he was the first to handle the 2025 Texas Monthly Top 50 list. So that's the plan. Going to try to get all of them. Going to have to do some road tripping into Austin. Going to have to spend a little time in Houston, a little time in Dallas, getting to some of those places. And then, of course, you'll have to plan some road trips to some of the farther flung ones. But getting the ones in the Rio Grande Valley done was a big deal. Right. That's a 9.5 hour drive for me from Shreveport. So getting those done certainly helped a lot. Now it's just a matter of getting to Austin, getting to Dallas, getting to Houston. That way I can get a large portion of those things done. But that's the plan. So thank you, Jeff, for your question about the Texas Monthly Top 50 list. Again, if you want to send us a question, email, text, voicemail, or comment on any of our either our YouTube channel or any of our social media at the BBQ Hound. Big thanks to Brendan Todd of Brendan's Barbecue from Nacogdoches for joining us. If you get a chance to get to the Piney Woods of East Texas, maybe go catch a game at Stephen F. Austin football or basketball. Their basketball team is always very, very good. Their football team has been performing well so far. So get over to East Texas, get to Nacogdoches, go see Brendan Todd at Brendan's Barbecue. We appreciate everyone for tuning in. We appreciate everyone for continuing to share this stream, share this program. Please tell all your friends. Let's get more subscribers. Let's get more sharing going on. Let's continue to grow this thing. That has been this week's edition of the Barbecue Hound with Patrick Netherton. See you next week.